Should I give Ted a moment to come back?
Nice camera. I got off the mission in a phone booth at about 10 feet. It was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get started. I'd like to welcome everyone out to the work session of the City Council meeting for February 15th, 2022. First item is a presentation of draft information related to the city's amended water master plan, and so I'll turn it over to Ken.
Thank you, Mayor. We have been working on this master plan for a long time, and the council may remember that we hired Bowen Collins Engineers to assist us with updating our water and stormwater master plans and various other tasks. So I'll introduce Keith Larson, who's standing here ready to make this presentation. We'll also introduce Andrew McKinnon, who's with Keith, and they have been the managers of this project, I guess, so to speak, and have worked with us, and we're just excited to have them here tonight to present this first meeting of this project to the council.
Does that, there we go. Live mic, excellent. All right, thank you for the opportunity to come up and join with you tonight. Ken was even nice enough to feed us, which we really appreciate as bottom feeding consultants. It doesn't always get to us, but we appreciate that. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, and I hope this can be a conversation more than just a straight presentation. A couple of things. Number one, we're hoping to get some feedback tonight, and we're not asking for any kind of final decisions, but any feedback you can provide to us tonight will help us in getting you closer to the answer you're looking for, and then you can make final decisions the next time we're around. And number two is we have a lot of stuff here, and if we don't get through it, and if Ken will agree to feed us again, we are perfectly happy to come back. So we appreciate that. All right. So with that said, I think you can all see this on your screens. We're going to try to cover three things. Really quickly, an overview of the master planning process. We're going to give you some information on analysis of the potential annexation area to the west. Andrew's going to cover that for me. And then I will come back and talk about revenue and rates a little bit, give you some thoughts on that. So really quick, these are the major tasks that we were asked to do. Very first is the water master plan, and relative to schedule, we have not wanted to finalize that until we have a little bit of direction on the potential annexation and what direction you want to go there. So we're hoping to get a little feedback to help us wrap that up. Once we get that decision, we're probably 4 to 6 weeks out on finalizing that master plan. The well sustainability study is essentially complete. The analysis on the sustainability of your wells, you'll be getting a draft report on that this month. Conservation plan will be coming in March. Our storm drain master plan, the draft on that is actually complete and will be delivered to the city next week. So that's where we're at on that. The rate study, both water and storm drain rates, we're hoping to have the initial discussion today to provide some feedback for more refined results in a month or two. And then finally, impact fees is the last thing that we do. We have to have all the master plans in place, essentially adopted or agreed to before we can finalize those impact fees. So that's looking early summer, targeting May of 2022. So that's progress. Any questions or anything relative to that? Okay. I just threw this on here just to give you an idea of what will be coming relative to, this is one of the figures from the storm drain master plan, looking at model results and where you have potential existing issues in the system. So we'll talk about this in a lot more detail, but we had enough on the plate that we decided just to show you this is what's coming and then come back. Okay, with that said, I'm going to let Andrew talk about the annexation.
All right, so one of the reasons the storm drain master plan is done and the water master plan's not done yet is the annexation area to the west. From a storm drain perspective, we know the city's just going to require them to handle their own stormwater, and so the analysis kind of goes away from a master planning perspective. Not so on the water side, specifically the culinary water side. So a few of the major conclusions on culinary water impacts is that all of that area will need to buy Weber Basin Water Conservancy District water. And the primary reason for that is that the groundwater in the city is, you're basically at your sustainable water use right now, or even above it. So there's really no excess groundwater available to serve the annexation area, so that they'll have to purchase Weber Basin water, which is more expensive than what the city pays for right now. Culinary storage, right now the city has a little bit of excess storage that they could sell to the annexation area, but at build-out of the city with all the redevelopment plans, there would be a 110,000-gallon deficit. So there's a few different ways you can try to accommodate that deficit at build-out. One's to sell your excess storage now and then build more storage later. Just, you know, as redevelopment comes into the city, you just have the future developers pay for that storage. You could require the developer to build storage now. You know, right now there's no really available open ground in the city, so any new storage would likely require purchasing private property. Another option would be to participate in like a life cycle replacement project for one of your existing tanks. I think your oldest tank was constructed in 1965, which from a tank perspective doesn't mean you're at the end of your tank's life necessarily, but you're getting up there in age a little bit. And then culinary conveyance, there are at least two fairly significant pipelines that the annexation area would need to construct to connect to the city's existing water system. Any questions on culinary water impacts? Okay. Secondary water impacts. This, from a city perspective, it's a little bit less impacts to the city's facilities because they're going to be required to build their own facilities for secondary water. They need to bring their own water rights. They need to bring their own storage and bring their own secondary conveyance and pump stations. So not as much of an impact. We've reviewed the developments they've proposed and have identified some deficiencies in what they've proposed so far. But it won't impact the city's capital costs necessarily or rates. So in terms of capital costs, I think the biggest discussion point would be on culinary storage. How would the city want to basically accommodate that deficit for the annexation area? That's probably the major decision that the city would need to think about.
Excuse me, will you speak more closely into the mic?
I'm having
difficulty hearing you.
So just reviewing the capital costs for the culinary system, the major decision the city would need to make is on how are you going to handle the deficit at build-out for the annexation area. And the three options really are you can sell your existing excess storage and make future developers build new storage when it comes to it. You can make the developer build new storage now, or you could potentially, along those lines, you could have the developer participate with the city in building rebuilding an existing storage facility, if that makes sense. And then in terms of ongoing costs, the major difference because the annexation area is going to have to purchase Weber Basin water, the one thing that the city would need to decide is how do you want to charge water for that area? Some cities like to have a single rate serving all residents in the city, and then some cities might break it up and make the newer areas pay their own way, pay their own rate. So that would be another decision that the city would need to make. And I'll turn the time back over to Keith on the rate analysis, unless there's any questions.
I've got one. The developer of the proposed annexation claimed they had some water rights from the Jordan River.
Yeah.
Did you factor that in, and how does
Yes,
that...
they do have water rights, and for the River Ranch specifically, the water rights that they've proposed to bring is sufficient for River Ranch. It's not sufficient for both the River Ranch and the Cross E Ranch. So the Cross E Ranch would need to bring some water as well to be able to have enough secondary for the whole area.
Okay, thank you.
Sir, can I ask a follow-up question, Andrew? Yeah. So those water rights, are those for secondary or culinary?
Yes, that's secondary only.
Secondary only, right?
Yeah. Secondary only for those online.
I have a question as well. In your experience analyzing similar projects for annexation, would you say this path to having water available in the annexation seems pretty typical? Does it seem like it's quite onerous? Does it seem like it's quite easy? Do you have any assessment of that?
It's not unusual necessarily. I know for a lot of the areas in Salt Lake County, for example, Jordan Valley specifically has said that any areas outside of existing corporate boundaries will pay a separate rate when they annex. So they'll need to buy the newest water for Jordan Valley and pay a higher rate on those.
But would you say the entire plan to make this a functional kind of living space, does it feel like, oh yeah, that's an easy annexation to kind of fold into the system, or does it feel like this is a particularly difficult one or kind of neutral, average?
I would say it's neutral because the facilities that need to be constructed for the annexation area aren't very onerous, and if the annexation is paying for most of those facilities, that's not too challenging. The biggest challenge is the storage, culinary storage. How do we accommodate that?
Great, thank you.
And just to clarify, are you asking onerous on the developer's part or relative to what the city's being asked?
Both. Just kind of an evaluation of if this project is the right project for this city. Is this a workaround that we're trying to do that it could have fit in a better way? You guys, they're on the brink between our city and Salt Lake City. Is this a kind of a workaround? Like, yeah, we can get them in here, but it's kind of difficult to do that, or is it pretty neutral, I think, is what you're saying, to do that?
For the city, this is really choose your own adventure in my mind.
Yeah.
I was very surprised that you didn't have to put in major pipelines across the city. There's just a few culinary connections. Putting those onto the developer, they're directly benefiting from them. It's really kind of what do you want your city to be? I do think it's important for you and equity to your customers, your citizens, that you do require the developer to cover all those costs and that you're not extending city resources to do that. That's sort of my personal opinion. If you want to facilitate it, you could go there. But really, it's kind of, do you want them to be part of the system or not? That's where we're at.
Thank you. That's
so
helpful.
Trying not to make this last longer on the annexation, but I think from the city staff perspective, what will happen, practically speaking, is that the city will have to purchase water at a much higher cost than the water that we currently provide our existing customers. And so that policy decision about whether the annexation area pays those future residents pay 100% of that extra cost, or do you spread that around to all the city's customers? Right now, we're on that program. So people in the hillside where it costs a little bit more to pump water up the hill and it's a little more expensive to provide, they don't pay more today. The 100% of the costs of the system are borne by all the customers, regardless of where they live. So for me, I think that's a particularly significant question in the future, should we annex. I do agree with these gentlemen that providing physical infrastructure is not a challenge. It's very common. It's what cities do, and there are many ways to do it. But that question about how the customers' costs are allocated is an important question that's unique to this annexation.
So we've kind of reached a point where this is where it'd be nice to get a little feedback. We need to finalize the master plan, and we will write it around one of two options, with the annexation or without the annexation. We can stick in the appendix kind of the alternative, and there will be some information on that either way, because we've already looked at a lot of it. But I guess I would prefer to write the plan around what you think the most likely scenario is. So Is anybody willing to give me a little direction on which way I should write the report?
I think that the proposal as presented to us will not go forward. We possibly might be open to other uses that have a lot less water needs.
Okay. So unless somebody tells me differently, I'm going to write the report around without the annexation and include an appendix that has this analysis at the end. Okay. Great. Look how easy that was. All right. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Okay. Most of the rest of the time, we are going to spend talking about rates a little bit relative to big picture planning issues. And the rate study process has three steps. Step one is to figure out how much money you need. And then steps two and three are to figure out how to collect that money from your customers most fairly and most appropriately. So the right way to do this is to talk about step one first, establish the revenue needs, and then talk about, okay, how do we want to collect those as a second step. So let's talk about revenue needs for just a minute. Okay, so as you'll see in the master plan, and we're going to talk water first, and then we'll talk storm drain here at the very end. The city's really facing three big challenges. I would say the number one challenge that the city is facing is aging infrastructure. You have a lot of infrastructure in the ground that is going to age over time and need replacement and maintenance. That's not an issue new to this city. Everybody is facing that right now. A lot of the older neighborhoods are getting to the point where their pipes are needing replacement. So that's one big issue. Number two, as Andrew mentioned, is that from our well sustainability analysis, your groundwater in your aquifer is essentially at its max. You have additional water rights, but the wet water in the ground is not there to pull out without continuing to draw down the aquifer. So you might be able to get a little bit more out here and there, and there's a couple things we can do to manage that. But overall, you shouldn't be relying on a lot more groundwater. So you're going to have to come up with solutions for reliability and redundancy that address that. And then number two is annexation or not, and future growth, which is pretty much a certainty, will result in some additional demands on the system that are going to need to be met. Your system, just spoiler for when we come back to talk master plan results, is in excellent shape from a capacity standpoint. You've done some great work in planning. Paul and his team have sized facilities. There's not a whole lot of projects in issue number three, but those other two are challenges moving forward. So with that said, I just want to talk some big picture numbers here. Over the last 5 years, North Salt Lake's average system investment has been just over $1 million a year. That includes work that you've contracted out and work that you've done in-house relative to maintaining rehabilitation replacement of your pipelines. The estimated value of your system right now is $240 million. That's the value of your water system. We generally recommend an investment range of between 1% and 2% for system facilities. So where that comes from is you basically are looking at either between a 50-year and 100-year replacement plan for your system. David could tell you that there's very few facilities that will actually last 100 years. That's probably on the upper end. Most stuff, though, we can get 50 years out of, electronics and pumps, wear things notwithstanding. But so Based on that, we would say the recommended minimum system investment would be the $240 million times 1% or $2.4 million a year, which is a little over double what you've done over the last 5 years. So that's probably one of the big takeaways that I want to communicate. So in terms of sustainably funding the water system, we would recommend you increase your total revenues. And I've actually already talked about those three: system investment, groundwater scarcity, and then system expansion are the things contributing to that. Okay, so let's look at this figure. There's a lot going on here, so we'll spend a little time, but it's a very useful for looking and planning into the future. So what you're seeing right here are your expenditures and your revenues, both historic and projected future. The bars are expenditures. The kind of green at the bottom there, or yellow-green on this screen I'm looking at, those are your O&M costs, the costs of simply running the system. And you can see that over time, they're growing both with inflation and with system growth. So those are fairly well set. In addition to that, we have debt service costs, which is kind of the aquamarine color there in the middle. And that's debt that you're paying. And those are also fairly fixed because they're commitments that you've already made. And then on top of that are your capital expenditures. And what we've done is we've shown the historical expenditures from 2019, 2020, and 2021, and that what you currently have programmed in for 2022, 3, 4, and 5. Now, that doesn't capture all your expenditures, and certainly moving forward, you're going to want to continue to spend on capital. We just haven't put that in there because they're not programmed out yet. But then on top of those, or in addition to that, we've provided two additional lines. The first black line is your expected revenue. And this slide, when it got copied over, missing from the legend, so I apologize for that. But the black line is expected revenue. There's a couple things that I want to point out here. Item number one is that you can see in 2020, 2021, and projected for the next couple of years are some elevated impact fee revenues that are keeping that line a little bit higher than you saw in 2019 and would be projected moving forward. So we have put those in based on the projects that you have in the works. But from 2024 on about, that is impact fees based simply on the projections and population growth from the Wasatch Front Regional Council. So you can see those kind of come down and stabilize. The other thing I'll point out here is that you can see that once those come down a little bit, you don't have a whole lot of revenue for your capital expenditures. Those would quickly dwindle to zero without further action. By 2028, you're basically only covering your O&M and debt service without any kind of action. Okay, so let's talk about the other line. I can't tell what color that is, but the lighter color at the top there. The other line is your recommended long-term system investment. So what is that? That is essentially O&M plus the $2.4 million a year that I identified in the previous slide. So that's where we would like to see your revenues coming in at, essentially, to be able to sustainably fund your system. What I have pointed out is that by the year 2024, expected revenues are about 40% below, $1.8 million below what that recommended sustainable level of funding is. So before we get too worked up and feel like the sky is falling, I think it is important to note that you do have cash reserves that you have available to help you fund your capital projects over the next couple of years. You don't have to do anything immediately, but our analysis is that we would recommend you do some gradual increases over time to be able to get that black line up to match close to or maybe even slightly above the light-colored line at the top. Okay, I spoke a lot. Time for some questions, comments, thoughts.
So just to clarify, your recommendation is that we perhaps yearly increase the fee we charge the residents for water.
Yes. How you get there is kind of up to you and what you want to accomplish. But if it were me and it were my system, I would probably start implementing some gradual rate increases. And when I say gradual, 10% per year for the next 4 or 5 years, something in that range, to be able to get those funds up to where they need to be over time.
I was going to say we could tie it to the CPI and it would be huge increases.
Any other questions or thoughts?
I'll just give a little history lesson, and I never let facts get in the way of a good story. But my recollection when, probably back when Stan and I first got on the council, we were paying kind of a stiff penalty when we borrowed money because we didn't have any reserves in our water fund. And there was a decision made by previous councils to subsidize the water out of the general fund, and that was not only costing the city out of the general fund, but it was hurting us when we went to borrow money. And so we rectified that, and there's a little bit of pain with that, but I guess I'm always a lot more comfortable in paying for services fees as opposed to just raising taxes. And so I think that's just kind of the last 14-year history. But we did change the way we billed for water, and we did increase water rates. And, you know, in this environment where money has no value anymore, maybe we need to keep doing it.
So I guess maybe one piece of feedback I'm seeking here is our recommended funding level at that $2.4 million a year to be able to sustainably fund the system. Does that concern anybody? Is there generally support for that level of funding from what I've been able to tell you?
No.
Well, it's the only concern I have is that it seems like we've got a newer section of town. I just wonder how long, I mean, why is it going to not take as much money in the newer part of town, I wouldn't think, as the older part of town. And so we've got two new sections in town. When I say new, they're, you know, 10, 20 years old, but 30 right. years old, I guess. I don't know. And it seems like we've been putting money into a lot of the water systems, and hopefully we're designing them in such a way that they last a lot longer than they originally did.
Right. Yeah, and I would expect that you wouldn't have to do much work in the newer sections of town over the next 20 years or 30 years. But those older sections of town are going to require attention. And by continually putting in that 1% or a little bit more, you're going to be able to stay on top of that rather than get behind. So that's a good point. Okay.
So question, have you outlined the age of the systems and where, you know, like priorities? Because I think Stan made a great point that the original section of the city, the older part of the city, it seems like that would be the critical area.
Right.
Foxborough wouldn't be, Eaglewood wouldn't be as much.
Yeah. So in terms of individual projects, like which needs to be replaced, we'll be working with Dave, Paul, and their team to tie those down, but we have not done that yet.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. We have a couple
councilmembers. Go ahead. I think you were first.
Okay. Your question was, are we concerned about raising the rates? And of course we are.
Of course, yeah.
And as a city, I think the one thing that's kind of a comfort is that there's clearly a tangible resource that one obtains by spending money, which everybody can understand, right?
Yeah.
So it makes it a little less politically dangerous, if you will, because we need to keep our infrastructure going and current. Now, the other question I've got is, of course, you can't tell me this, but maybe Ken can, and that is ARPA funding. What percentage of this can be covered by ARPA until 2026?
Thank you for that question. That's a great question. ARPA funds can be used for water infrastructure, and so so that will be a source we'll look to as the staff evaluates this master plan update and this recommendation. What I appreciate about this recommendation is that it gives us exactly what we had hoped it would do, and that is tell us if we have major course corrections we need to make, which is what good master plans do. They identify, they project into the future, they give governing bodies a diagnosis, if you will. With some of you earlier today, I used an analogy about a patient-doctor relationship. I mean, he called himself a bottom-dweller consultant, but I'm putting him on a doctor level for a minute.
Wow.
Because I think that before we knew this, we didn't have as clear an idea about water service moving forward. And I think that this is an excellent guiding policy recommendation. I think the implementation of that is a far more detailed exercise that we all have to go through together. That will include a look at ARPA funds, it'll include a look at rates, it will include absolutely a look at facilities in need of repair, putting those repairs out in a calendar in the future, which we do now. We have a 5-year plan today, and we always have a 5-year plan. I think, and I would remind the council that these facilities don't need repair in $2.4 million increments every 12 months. They need repair in different blocks and groups, and there may be years when we save our funds for a large project and years when we spend more funds than $2.4 million. But I do think, just as the city manager, I really support this level of recommendation for us. I think it'll be really valuable for you as you make policies and as the staff helps you to craft a response to this policy, which will include rate increases, of course, but might include more detailed analysis of how we address the next 5, 10, 20 years. I'm just appreciative that we have done the study, and I think it'll be really a valuable starting point for us. I think it will also help the public as we think about how we want to educate the public. I think it's really going to be helpful information for the public also. And for some of you who haven't been on the council, the last couple of years at least, this idea of aging infrastructure as a challenge to our community in particular has been a theme of budget retreats, mostly with roads. And so the three of you that, or four of you maybe that were here in the last retreat, you know, we talked a lot about aging roads and how are we going to increase our level of expenditure on road repair and road maintenance, and which we did, and the council has done that, and we are and we now have a new level of expenditure, and we'll go through the same exercise here with water, which I think is very encouraging. It's a great service to the residents. You guys, you know, making these hard decisions about how to serve these systems is really a tough part of the job, but I'm grateful that we have good information to
well,
go on.
Well, Ken, that was, when I was asking my question, that was, I was thinking about the road plan. We have a plan for our roads. We have identified which roads need immediate attention, which can be deferred, and so, you know, I feel comfortable we have this plan to address the roads, and sounds like we need little bit of that for the water system too.
Exactly.
And just to add a little, that's really the purpose of this meeting right now, is to kind of understand the vision so that we can come back with a 10-year plan that matches both the needs with kind of how the council sees the rates moving forward. They're connected.
Yeah. Mayor, 20 years ago, I served on a water review committee here in the city, and we were concerned then about the west side of the city paying to pump the water up the hill. And now we have bigger west side than we did before, and bigger hill than we did before. My concern about the increase in rate is that it might make it more difficult to figure out what's fair. Like, if we figure out that it's not fair for the west side to pay to pump water up the hill, then the east side's water rates are going to go up higher than the west side's. It's not going to be 10% a year. And so that's my concern, is that we need to figure out a way to do this equitably, but also make sure that, well, I guess equitably both ways. Make sure that it's equitable in the increases as well as equitable in who's paying for what.
Thank you. Ted, did you have something? Oh, okay.
So in the interest of time, I think this has been really great feedback for us. I think I'd like to cover one more topic before we run out of time here. I'll just flash this up really quick. Here is North Salt Lake rates versus some of your neighbors, Bountiful, Farmington, Layton, Ogden, and Salt Lake City. With the various colors, you'll notice that we've included your average user in the middle, but we've also included a user who uses about half of average water use and a user who uses about double average water use for comparison. The good news here is that you're starting from a pretty good spot. You're some of the cheapest rates of your peers, so there is definitely some room to move up without looking like the most expensive in town. The other thing that I was asked to talk about is this second component, which is rate design and specific relative to conservation. And so what we'd like to talk about here are those two cost of service and rate design steps. So there's two things as we look at your rates that we would highlight relative to future rate design. And the first is there's an industry trend moving away from a water allowance included in your base rate. So we'll talk about that real quick. And then potentially there are some adjustments to your tier structure that could best encourage conservation and maybe better match cost of service. So let's talk about the allowance. Right now, what you charge is you charge a base rate that's, let's use the top line there, $25.90 for a three-quarter inch above 350 East. And included in that is 8,000 gallons of water that is essentially, you know, free water. You're not charged for it, that first 8,000 gallons. So what that means is that under the current approach, you pay the $25.90 base rate, you get the free 8,000 or no charge for the 8,000 gallons, and then you only pay water use above that. Industry trend for conservation reasons is to start, is an alternative approach, which would be you could potentially reduce your base rate. Perhaps you drop it down to $20, for example, and then you would have users start paying at the first gallon. So if you only use 4,000 gallons, you only pay for 4,000. If you use 8,000, you pay for 8,000. I thought I had a benefits. Obviously, the benefit of that is that you provide some incentive for conservation of indoor water use. Another benefit might be that it would potentially lower the cost for some of your low water users, specifically fixed income with very low water use. That may be a way of actually decreasing rates a little bit for them. The only disadvantage of this is stability. Right now, you can guarantee you get the $25.90 each month in the winter. Whereas with the alternative approach, you may see more or less depending on how much people use and if they conserve. So real quick straw poll, do you like the idea of eliminating the allowance? Do you not like the idea? Any feedback for me?
Sorry, rudimentary question. Eliminating the allowance meaning go away from the left.
Correct. Go from the left to the right. Yeah.
Okay. I support moving away from the allowance, the base rate, moving more towards a pure user fee approach.
I do as well, and not just because D. Lawless told me to.
It's really equitable. That's tied to the use. So I'm in favor of that as well.
It's pay for what you get. There is the stability issue, but we can kind of offset that by the way we design the rates.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about, the potential loss of revenue,
right?
And how we'd respond to that.
Because especially in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But people don't water their grass in the wintertime, so it goes down, and then in the summertime it goes way up. But hopefully you could figure all that out and make it work.
You know, I like the idea of a very accelerated rate for heavy users. And my limited experience is they don't seem to care. They don't cut back. You know.
When we looked at that 20 years ago, we realized that we would have to include the lot size in everybody's water bill because, like, if I'm a heavy user on my tiny lot, that could be the same as a low user on Lisa's lot, you know? So we figured that we'd have to do that. We have that information available. But we would then have to decide what is appropriate water use for everyone, and then multiply it by their lot size.
Or well, so, not necessarily.
Yeah, but yeah, why does the lot size have to be included?
They use, you know.
So this is a great lead-in to our next little discussion. I heard general consensus that moving away from the allowance was okay. Let me give you a little more information, and then I don't want to interrupt this conversation, but let me give you a little more information, and then you can continue. So this is exactly that concept, and this is an illustration of tiered water rights or tiered water rates. Let me tell you how you read this chart. Along the bottom is the quantity in gallons that is used each month, and then what you pay for those gallons is shown on the y-axis there. So for example, just because it's easiest to see for me, that Layton, you're just right around a dollar up to about 10,000 gallons, and then you jump up to just under $2 per 1,000 gallons up to, what is that, about 25,000? So you see that stair step reflects those increasing rates. The North Salt Lake is the pink color there, and what you can see is that especially at the lower smaller tiers, you're actually below many of your peers in terms of what you're charging there. Another way to look at this same information is to take the tier one rate and then divide all the other tiers by that tier one. So what that tells you is how many times more do you pay for water in the upper tiers than your base indoor water use. And so in this case, you can see everybody starts at one because that's their tier one, and then they scale up from there. And again, what you can see is that North Salt Lake is kind of at the bottom of those steps, probably the least aggressive of the current. Would you
be willing to please take a spot on that pink line and explain one spot?
You betcha. Okay, so do I have a, let's see, I don't, whoops, I just turned it off. Oh, there you go, okay. So in this particular case, so at the spot that's being pointed out right there, that's your third tier after your allowance. You have tier one and then tier two, so called tier two. We're taking the amount that you pay there and dividing it by your tier one costs. And what you can see is you pay about 130% for that tier compared to what you pay for your base water rate, that first 8,000 gallons. So that's what that is. Unfortunately, I see that there's a problem in this slide when it came across. I probably should have PDF'd it. Let me talk about what that blue ice cream cone is there. This is identified as a cost of service envelope, and the problem I have is it's actually shifted down from where it was in the original slideshow.
We have the correct one in our...
Oh, do you have it?
Because it's different. It starts with the...
Perfect.
Tier
and I do
later.
Love a good cost of service envelope, I'll have to say.
Yes, there you go. There you go. All right, so let's talk about what that is, that tasty cost of service envelope. So here's what it is. When you use water, a lot of water outdoors, you get you're using water at a higher peak rate. So what that means is that in the system, we have to build more storage for you. We have to make pipes bigger for you. We have to add additional supplies and pump stations. So it's more expensive to serve more water than it is to serve less water. And so what we've done for dozens of other clients is we've looked up what is the actual cost of service to provide that water at higher levels of water use. And that is what this cost of service envelope is. It's capturing kind of the higher communities and the lower communities, how much it costs to serve that greater amounts of water. So long story short is for ideal fairness between residents, the best design that you have would be to structure your tiers so that they stay roughly inside that cost of service envelope. So I think if you go to the next sheet, oh look, that one's shifted down too. So look at the one on your hard copy.
So we're way out of whack is the
so
takeaway.
So the long story short is you are not charging enough for your larger blocks of water. And so you have some definite room for conservation potential by increasing those blocks. So I apologize for the graphics here, but hopefully that's making sense on the sheet. And let's see. Let me just summarize advantages and disadvantages. So under the current approach, the advantages, consistency, revenue stability. The advantages of going to more aggressive blocks, you better align with the actual cost of providing that water, and you can encourage conservation. We've put kind of a who benefits on some of those, you can probably figure out who does not benefit by the opposite. So with that said, let the debate begin, or What's your thoughts?
I have a question. Can you go back to the slide right before this?
Yes, I can.
So the pink line that represents North Salt Lake is specified to be homes below 350 East?
Yes, although your actual blocks are identical. It's just the dollar value that changes.
Okay, so the same pattern is at play there.
That's
okay,
right.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Other questions, comments?
So is your primary question, do we want to bump up the pink into the blue envelope? Is that your basic question?
Yeah. Is that of interest to you? Yeah.
I don't know why we would not do that offhand, so I don't have the counterpoint to, it seems like we would do that.
I think the question really is, this is a water conservation technique, and is that where we want to go? Do we want to encourage conservation through an aggressive rate structure?
I mean, that might be a benefit, and that's a significant benefit. I thought, can you remind us or restate, was there also a basic question
of fairness or cost distribution?
Yeah, well, and I'm just forgetting what you said about the envelope, even though I love them so much.
Yes.
But, you know, in terms of paying, it's paying for what we need to pay for.
That's right.
I mean, it's actually getting us the revenue that we need. So there's conservation plus.
That's right. The closer you can be to the blue envelope, the closer you are to matching the actual cost of what it provides, what it takes to provide water.
And
so, let me give you the counter argument. The counter argument might be, well, a couple things. One, this is how we've always done it in the past, and we're used to it. There's one counter argument. Another might be, by making the tiers more aggressive, we're going to see conservation at those upper ends, which will reduce our revenue, which means we're going to have to charge more for other water. So is that really the cycle that we want to get into?
I didn't understand that. Say that one again.
Well, so as you make that top tier more expensive, that gives motivation to conserve, right?
Right.
So once you do that, you sell less water and you have less revenue.
Okay.
for the water.
That's if the top consumers care. They might not care. They might just choose to spend more money on water.
Yes.
Hopefully they care.
I have a question. What is kind of a perplexing mystery or fact to me is how it is that Layton is so much more money. They're collecting so much more on their rates. They're outside the cost of service envelope. So it looks as though they're making money off of the water.
So they've chosen to emphasize conservation even beyond what the cost of service would suggest.
Okay. I just wanted to...
Yeah. They've decided that that's important to them, and so they have set their rates up accordingly.
So this would say that the cost of service envelope is similar regardless of city. It costs all cities similar amounts of money to provide that much water.
That's why there's an envelope, is every city's a little different. If I could do an exact analysis for you, I could probably draw a line that would be a little more narrow, but this is a good indicator overall.
So when you bump up the our pink line to
the dashed red line
in our packet, how does that relate to the revenue that we need?
I haven't done that analysis yet. I'm hoping to get this feedback, and then when I come back, I'll be closer to what you're actually looking for. I will note that there is the issue, and we have not attempted to address that, of large lot versus small lot. These tiers are more based simply on the ratio to that base 6,000. which would suggest large lots, even though they may be doing great with their water, they're still using more, they're still putting higher costs onto the system.
I like this idea because we chose to live where we do because it's a small lot and we love grass. I know you're not allowed to say that you love grass anymore because everyone's like, well, grass is bad, you're using all the water. But last summer, our neighborhood was asked to conserve, and we did. We conserved. But I have a small lot, and I'm conserving. Are the people with bigger lots who aren't hooked up to metered secondary, are they conserving as well? And so I think if we go to this structure, it will reward people who have said, I want a xeriscape, or I want a smaller lot or a smaller patch of grass. So I think that that's okay to not consider lot size.
Okay, I see my time's about out. I am totally, well, let me show you the very last item, which was storm drain. Maybe I saved the best for last, I don't know. This is the exact same figure that we looked at for water, but for storm drain. And what you'll notice is that the funding deficit, if I could call that, when we go out 3 or 4 years here, is actually bigger on a percentage basis. It's about half of what our recommended level of funding would be, which sounds terrible. However, I would remind everybody that your current rates are $6 per month. So if we were to, let's just say, double that over the course of the 10 years or whatever, we would be at $12 a month, which is still a, on a dollar basis, is not maybe as big even as the on the water side. So there's storm drain to give you the little bit of information there.
So just to summarize, we have a need to increase funding, and the good news is we're on the low end of the Davis County scale, so there's room to go up without looking out of whack. Okay.
I have one more question, and this might not be a question for you, and it might be something where I can be caught up outside of this meeting. But I'm interested in that idea of the cost of providing water service to the east side of the city and how that's being borne out throughout the city, and if that's something to also study at this point, if we want to have a two-tiered system that charges water on the east side at a different rate. I don't know enough about how it's done or why it was decided it's done that way, or what the cost differential is if it becomes worth it. So that's a question I have. I don't know if that's something you would do, or if you just can educate me on that later or now.
I think that's a great question, and I mentioned it because I think if we're going to really comprehensively study this for a little while, we ought to think about that. So I appreciate the question, and we'll put some work into it, into answering it.
I may be out of line, but I will suggest that if you have any comments, that you email them to Ken.
Yes.
And then Ken can pass them on to me so that when we come back here in a few months with some specific rate recommendations, they're as close as we can make them to the approach at any rate that you'd like to see.
I do think we want to move forward on this aggressive tiered approach for this coming outdoor watering season. So I think, Keith, when you say a few months, I think we're in a hurry to get rates adjusted for this next season, when the public expects that conservation is going to be important yet again, and they did respond well in Foxborough last year, but we have to keep that momentum or synergy or whatever you want to call it vibrant in the city by changing rates if we can.
And we can come back next week with some recommendations.
Yeah, I think that we should.
Let's say next time. Can come back with some specific if you're ready to move to that.
Great.
I have one more question. I would also like to know if there's a means that we could standardize the cost of service regardless of use across the year for a particular client, so that they're not worried about, well, it's my bill's $200 in the summer and $20 in the winter, and that might be something that happens after the fact, and maybe it's something that happens with finance where they can do that, but that's just a piece I would like potentially as an option for a customer to be able to say, I just want to pay the same every month, even though I know I'm not using the same every month.
And that...
Mayor?
We have quite a few residents that are on equal pay, so that's easy to set up.
The report that we have here obviously is a summary. Do we have the full report, or can we get a copy of the full report?
So the full report has not been written yet. The goal of this was to get some feedback, keep you in the loop, so that we could write that report.
Okay.
We'll give that to you, all the bloody details.
Perfect. The other thing is that, which you've done beautiful work, and the one thing that is troubling to me most of all is that the groundwater aquifer is approaching its excessive sustainable capacity. And that's kind of numbers that I want to find out about. I want to find out where we are, how dire those circumstances are in your report.
Yes. So that one, to go back to the beginning, that one's coming out by the end of this month. We'll have that to you.
So I assume that you have the ability to forecast not just revenue, but usage, which ties to revenue. And that's part of what you do, right?
Yes, correct. So I gave you the argument people are going to conserve. We're actually going to take that into account and adjust the rates accordingly. Predicting personal behavior is a difficult thing, but we can do the best we can with the data that we have.
We have the experience from other cities to learn
from. Yeah, I think we have a pretty good feel on it, but everybody's a little different.
All right, thank you, Keith.
Appreciate your time.
I'd like to just point out that Foxborough has conserved for 2 straight years. So they've done a great job. Yeah. I'm going to propose that normally we would take a break right now. I'm going to propose that we do the RDA meeting and then take a break. Does that work?
Yes.
Sure. So let's go into that. Do we need to change the recording or anything?
No, I think you just need to convene in the RDA meeting.
So I need a motion to go into the RDA meeting?
Sure. No.
I
Todd
will
says
move
no.
That
What's
we...
That? Todd says no.
Okay, no. Okay.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. We will now go into the RDA meeting of February 15th, 2022. And this is to discuss our participation with Castlewood Development in the Williamsburg Apartments. And Ken, I'll turn this over to you.
So, there we go. So, everyone will remember this is the property on your screen that we are talking about, a project that's a little over 5 acres in size on the west side of Highway 89. And is on the west side of our entrance into North Salt Lake if you're coming from the south into the city. It's the Williamsburg apartment project. This is a line drawing site plan of the project, which consists of 246 units, I believe. You guys correct me if I say that wrong. Kind of going off the top of my head, in 3 buildings. It's a beautiful project. It has a commercial element. It will have a reconfiguration of the intersection at Eagle Ridge Drive and Highway 89 with the new signal light. It expands the right-of-way along Highway 89, buries power lines, and generally improves the streetscape in a very significant way. we'll talk about some of those things. This is the landscaping and design as we look more closely at the project and the improvements on the property. This is the architecture, proposed architecture, and you'll recall that we visited a project earlier this year. Some of you visited a project that Castlewood Development showed us in Salt Lake, and beautiful entrance into the city. This will be a great enhancement to us. It's a project that we've hoped would be built for a long time. Oops. So this is information that was provided to you in your packet. I thought this table would be a good way to have this discussion. Sherry and I had a meeting today with Dwayne Rasmussen and Haley Pratt, who you will recognize are the proponents of this project, the developers of the project. We discussed these items, and I made a change today to the staff recommendation with respect to underground power, which I believe we can share with the developer. It is a city priority to bury our power lines. And this project has a little bit more benefit to us than just the frontage. Gosh, I'm hitting this too hard. So you can see that some of this power will be buried and it will be buried. It goes across the street, and it will be buried across Highway 89. And I think there is some justification for us to participate. Sherry, am I reading this the right way? Maybe you should explain the different colors on this.
Sure.
So that I don't mess it up.
So this illustrates the entirety of the power lines that are above ground. The green section is the section that we participated with Knowlton General for the City's Edge project in burying the lines there. What that actually did was bury the lines between those two poles. It didn't get rid of the two poles because there's still lines going the other way. Then each one of the circles is where one of the poles are. So Williamsburg's project is everything that's in yellow there, and then as well as the two, or this red crossing at Eagle Ridge Drive, there's one connection that they actually get the power from where the Quick Quack is, and it's coming across. So that part will be buried as well. That's part of the cost. And then there's some, it's not, you can't just proportionally say, okay, our portion that we think is off-site or what's on-site is proportional to the length or the distance, because there's additional costs for boring under Highway 89, and there's the high transmission gas line that is in there, and there's just a lot of things there. So I just didn't want you to think that was necessarily proportional to cost, but those are the ones. And then I wanted to illustrate with the red areas the other areas that we would like to see buried as well that are completely outside of this project, so that the RDA could think about that if that's something you wanted us to pursue in the future.
So that's a little bit of a change. And so I would recommend that we add $195,000 approximately, or up to that amount, to our participation. The way this then would work, which differs from the material that I sent you earlier in the packet, is that the city would be participating to the tune of $870,971, up to that amount in tax increment, sharing back with this development group, and a credit or waiver or refund of up to $97,000 in impact fees for the trail development, which is a regional trail connection. And you might remember it will run along the west side of all the properties on Highway 89 and end up in Hatch Park, which will be a great trail segment for all the multifamily that we're building there, and be a way for people to get to the park without using the sidewalks on Highway 89. Not that there's something wrong with those sidewalks, but it's a second way for people to have mobility and to get around the town center. So you might remember that the project has proposed to generate about $1.8 million in tax increment revenue. 75% of that projected TIF revenue is available. So we have $1.35 million projected that is available. And that leaves us a sizable portion after this obligation for use in other areas of the CDA project area, which, and we have improvements that we would use that money for as well. But I think this is a good proposal. And some of you have probably followed some of the discussion at the legislature on a bill, HB 151, which is a bill that is proposed to reduce the city's ability to incentivize retail development. In that bill, it's clear that public infrastructure and our ability to participate in public infrastructure will be preserved. And I felt good about this list because what I see here are many benefits to the public as we look at this project. This project is an unusual piece of property. It's a difficult piece to develop. It was an expensive piece to buy. And I do think it's appropriate for us to share some of this TIF revenue with this development group because there are some unusual pieces to the public infrastructure, such as the regional trail connection, the signal pole and redesign and reconstruction of the intersection at Eagle Ridge Drive, which is not a normal cost of a development. They will be doing greatly enhanced improvements on Highway 89, which are also larger in size and scale than what you would normally see in just a subdivision, and including the UTA bus stop and, of course, the land dedication and underground power, as Sherry explained. So I think these are appropriate ways for us to participate. And this, again, I said this at the beginning, this piece of property, the whole time I've worked here, for the 11 years I've worked here, has been the subject of redevelopment. It's been on the action item list. For years, I got teased because I couldn't get it off the action item list to clean up this piece of property on Highway 89. And I think this is a real success story for the city. It's highly desirable. And I also would commend the development group for investing in underground parking, which is very costly. And you saw some of their discussion in the packet that costs have changed on this project. They're still moving ahead with underground parking, which I think is a great amenity to these future residents. So with that, that's our recommendation. I know Duane is here, if you'd like to hear from him or if you have questions for him.
Ken, can I get you to repeat your number again? You said that.
Yes. The number, the math is 870,971.
From TIF.
In TIF sharing, and 97,000 in park impact fee.
Thank you.
And then you estimated the amount that would be left in the, that would remain to be potentially spent
sorry
in the district?
What it would be is, if someone can do this math, it's 576,000 less 195. So maybe 375,000. What's that?
381.
381.
Show off.
I knew someone could do that. So that would be left over. And as a reminder, I think I put some terms in the memo. So just as a reminder, it'd be good for the record that we say that this is an up to amount, that reimbursement would be based on actual costs with receipts. The city would verify that those costs are legitimate, bona fide costs, And so what we're approving is really the up to amount. Also, if the CDA, for some reason, does not collect this amount, the developer is risking that that this project will actually generate the TIF that we're projecting. So that's their risk, not our risk. Have to make those disclaimers, Dwayne, so just so you know. From here, I think if the board will make a motion directing us to put these terms into an agreement, we will do that and then bring it back for the board's approval.
Any questions? Any more questions?
No.
Do we have a motion?
Go ahead.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I will do this badly. I move that council...
the redevelopment.
Pardon me. Thank you. Uh-huh. You saved me from even greater embarrassment. I move that the redevelopment agency instruct the staff to prepare an agreement between the RDA and Castlewood Development that provides for reimbursement or fee credits up to, what is the new number?
870. It's on there, actually.
870-971 for the purpose of assisting in the cost of public infrastructure required in the Williamsburg Luxury Apartment Project.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call, starting with Elisa.
Aye.
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 I get to vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, that's right.
It's my right. It's... Okay, that motion passes. Now we need to approve the the meeting minutes from our last RDA meeting, November 30th, 2021. Are there any corrections to that? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes of November 30th of the RDA of North Salt Lake.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion passes. Okay. We adjourn?
I think you can just adjourn the meeting. And
why don't we adjourn, and why don't we take a 7 minute, nope, 6 minute recess. Yeah.